Ngishini bensalindele uMark unit manager a email I mean a comment then ifake kodwa ke noba selelanto ngizayijonga ngoku benibenithethe naye last night what uzayenza.
Oh okay,
so I'm planning to submit it ngoku kusasa nje nje.
Oh okay, no that's fine. Hey, I can't do check the data. I am 30 chance up. Everyone 30 chance up. Kwa kupeni ndiyo kutuwa ndingu BB, kumba ikula BB, eka nguwe kamalami.
Yazi nami ndikhe ndazibuza uthe ethe ndiseno b b o small apha ezaekaegama I don't know andimazi uvela phi nyam
u-adri
kaloku ilaa nto i-i c t che abasayisapoti ngoku kodwa ke uyakwazi umfumana unayo inambar yakho ungakwazi okanye ndithethe ndimbuze otherwise abekho bona abakho ababikho kwiplatform bona for kulaa nto ukusapota ngoku i-i t
Usihle uphi?
Sentsho bakhona basendaweni zabo abakho on this platform. They are not bad. But
oh,
ke
okay.
Ungabafumana xa ufuna umthetha naye.
Ewe ke ndimfowune ndibuzwa. Kuthele nto ndashiye nangubb nje. Isesisobabini xa i-members
no honorable nkabane ya nini nobabini tshe
okay
nangu honorable denare ngena
bengathi ungangeni Upi lo mfana uyi assistant.
Ubaba ngambone ngena umuntu osendimbonile ongenile nguTebuho kwi staff.
Umvaba kanti songena nini?
Umvaba nolanto nosibongisena nika Vandi Sajonga andikababo. Ono Honorable Ngwezi naye nanku engena.
Banibona nekuseni. Nomzana sakasa nabahlonishwa bonke. Sihlale phambili.
Siyakubona sihlonishwa unjani?
Hayi, siphilile. Siyanyamezela.
Hayi, namhlanje wayinsizwa ephilileyo. Cabanye hani ufuna ubonakala ukuthi uyiwisile pa uyikhuphe ne-festive.
No, bengiyokwenza ikhandi izolo.
Siyakubona.
Hayi, siyabonga maniphile.
Siyabonga nathi xa uphila bhuti.
Yeah.
Good morning, Jay. Good morning, everyone. I hope you're well.
Good morning, Mrs. Stella. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. How are you, Jay?
I'm fine, honorable. How's Bloemfontein?
It's warmer. It's not as cold as it was, so we can start living now again.
It was
-9 the other morning, so it was quite cold, but it's better now.
Okay. All right.
Good morning, Chair. I'm a member of the public. I'm just introducing myself. I'm going to be joining you this morning.
It's the first time that I have a member of public that is greeting.
Oh.
and your name is?
My name is Mika Crano, Chair. I'm from Bowman's. We're an attorney firm in Johannesburg.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So thank you for letting me attend.
Okay. We will tell you the rules when we start, but you are welcome. Thank you.
So
Morning, Chair. I'm
trying to get hold of Ukombe Chinonze and Muslim.
Okay. Sure, this is. Honorable Mugabe, how are you? Did you travel well yesterday?
Morning, Chair. I traveled very well, thanks. I'm alive and kicking.
I can see. I hope you are in a spot where you are not going to break.
No, I'm in Parliament in my office.
Oh, take care.
Take care.
Okay. No, that's fine. Yeah. Oh, that's fine. Yeah, but now we pay and we call it Panoi.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sorry, sir, but one man, it's too confined for 2 hours.
No. Kutla, I would do an old day, I would be masked there, do you shake up your corn? Who writes a book?
Yes, yeah, but I 2 hours, same Kuluga Kulu for me.
Oh, Tatum Tabe.
Oh, Baba, we are
crazy.
I believe in networking up in Makai and Kanya Gute.
Icon, the silo see Fagil.
Oh, the Wonga,
They can arrange that for
money.
Can you manage?
Can you show your network in Allah?
Hey, Samu, and I guess it's food of Zaganjan, but Samu Kalenda in a network.
Rolokunzam.
Okay. All right. In the next 2 minutes, we are going to start. I can see everybody is in. And
Chen, you think Honorable Nonsa Eleni Gambo and Anbang Shambu says, Anna?
Thank you. I'm on.
Good morning, honorable members. By the looks, the majority of us are here. I think we are then going to start our meeting, the plenary today. I hope I'm audible. The Sakaza. Mr. Sakaza, can Mr. Sakaza unmute, because we are going to start?
Yes, Chair, I was just talking to the PCS, but it's fine, Chair. I'm here. Can I start?
Okay. No. Good morning, honorable members. We are now going to start. Today is the presentation of the third and the fourth quarter by both compensation fund and UIF. So we are not going to waste time because we do have plenary today. So I would like that we, if possible, we finish on time so that members who are to prepare for today's session are able to prepare because our cluster, which is economic cluster, is going to ask questions. I see there are a couple of questions to the minister. I don't know whether the minister has logged in as Zolani.
Yes, sir.
Can we then we formally open our meeting? Can we then get the formal credentials, who is here, who is not here, if there are any apologies, so that we are then able to hand over to the minister and the department. Over to you, Mr. Sakaza.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Chair. Can you hear me? Hello, Chair.
Continue.
Oh, okay. Thank you, Chair, and good morning to all members and the department. Chairperson, the only apology that I received was of Honorable Hermans. Otherwise, the members that have joined us today is yourself, Chair, the Chairperson, Honorable Ngabane, Honorable Zuma, Honorable Ndabe, Honorable Nkangwini, Honorable Bagram, Honorable Kato, Honorable Ngwezi, and Honorable Denner. That's the only members that I've received. I can't see Umise Nontele at the moment. Thank you, Chair. And then from the staff, I've got Tebuho, I've got Umvaba. That's it for now, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Who's that? Thank you very much, honorable members. We have also been joined by a guest who introduced herself. I hope I'm going to pronounce her name, Maike, who has joined us And therefore, I think it's going to be important to outline the ground rules, ma'am. House rules, I'm sorry, is that your phone must be off. You are just here to listen to us. Unfortunately, we won't have break where you can then interact with members. You are not to ask any questions whilst you are in this platform. And we welcome you. I was just teasing you before we start that you are the first time that we have a guest that is introducing herself, and I appreciate that, and thank you very much. As long as you are muted, and as long as your phone is off, can we then allow the DG to take us through? Is the minister around?
Honourable Ngabane, the minister and DM, they are struggling with the connection, but they are saying hopefully in 3 minutes they'll be in. Thank you.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well, that disturbs our procedural, because we usually start with them to set the tone for our presentations. If members can agree, can we just give them that 3 minutes so that they log in? Is it fine, members? If I may ask.
Fine with me.
It's fine. Thank you.
I joined in also, Chair.
Uthini, Solan?
The City Chair, Honourable Nontsele, has just joined in also. No small saying from the support staff, Chair.
No, fine. I'm waiting for the Minister and his GM.
Yes, Chair. Thank you, Chair.
Morning, Chair, everyone.
Morning. Hi.
I'm not the network and the asking they are doing. But I think I need to send the fire IT band map by update. You know the systems and the same. No, the same because it's put a lot of money in the new lab and the poor metal. What I get in the final.
Molo, Comrade Nontsele.
Comrade Mthatha, kunjani?
Akukho ntombi, kunjani kuwe?
Ndiyakuva.
Yebo, ndiyeva ukuba i-Fourth Industrial Revolution iphethe kabi.
I'm my suspicion ukuthi I need to update some of like into the pin and so on, because it looks like it's a survivor.
Okay.
Yeah, so I need to update some of the land programs.
Who set up a number of the Eastern Cape?
Not set up.
Oh, I am. You're up.
Okay.
Okay.
From today.
All right. Hayi. Bage sjonge mbokithi.
Yeah. Yeah. Mara bantu abaninzi kodwa bamele babakhona by now. Cause some of them bebethi bayawela. Bese bayafika.
Hayi, sizobona. Bakhona yini namhlanje kwa ngomso ngithi ngomso kuna president.
Yes, yes. Yeah. izolo ndiye ndacinga kula program kaCombretu isanga ndadlala kuthi ndaphuma ndabe sendingena kuleke ngoku yesithini ya eyi man it was terrible kodwa le program kaCombretu isanga
very unfortunate yes
eyi man eyi you know, life really is short. Why don't you get a disco?
We are now going to start. We are done with our credentials. Can we ensure that we have all muted? Gigi, can you take us through? Whilst we are waiting for the ministry, Gigi.
Sorry, sir. The yes. DM is in already. The DM is in already, sir. Thank you.
We are then going to start, members. If then the DM is in, can we, before the DM?
Good morning, honorable members. I must say, honorable chairperson, my apologies. I had attended a funeral of a former member of parliament, Ms. Fimaine, so I've been trying to log on and I couldn't come through, but my apologies for not being able to come through earlier on. Can you please give me a minute just to download what my notes, if you don't mind, honorable chairperson. Just 1 minute.
Are you managing DM?
I'm managing. One second. Honorable Chairperson, my apologies, honorable members. I was not aware that the minister is not going to be able to join us this morning, so that is why I'm a bit here and there. But let me take this opportunity to thank you, honorable Chairperson, our Director General and Commissioners present today for the UIF and Compensation Fund. Members of the media, is there any our honored guests, honorable members? I think you will know by now, members, that we are still here, all of us, when some governments all over the world have collapsed. And this is not by an act of coincidence. I must say that we are afforded another chance to do what we are elected to fulfill, to serve our people as elected members of this. And I know that this is not the easiest time for anyone in our current positions of responsibility. And I must say that this time is not the easiest for officials of this department, led by the DG also, and both commissioners and the entire department and all our entities. I want to thank you, Honorable Chairperson and members, for your dedication and patriotism for the service you provide to the most needy through the important task that you are doing. We normally don't do this often to acknowledge the work that you are doing, Honorable Chairperson, that you are doing a very good job despite the challenges that are there before us. And I'm sure today's presentation of quarter three and four by both CF and UIF will actually take us a long way. I must say that we had challenges here and there. This might not be expected, but I want to actually thank you for pushing the boundaries of poverty, hunger and unemployment as best as you could. We have had our system challenges that you all know, delayed payments, fraudulent activities, overpayments, underpayments, challenges with verification of banking details and identification of applicants. All of this happened because you were not sitting back when there was an outcry. I hope all these encounters push you forward to discharge on this national duty. There will be disagreements and different views on how we perceive each other while we are doing our work. But I'm not the one to stand in judgment, Honorable Members. I will rather say because of you, there was hope and the opportunity, an opportunity for some families that today don't have the means and the voice to show their appreciation. Many of the families that were helped through our systems and through the UIF and through the compensation fund are unable to show that appreciation because they are among those who are voiceless. So this pandemic has revealed and brought to the light of day our true characters as individuals. And I know what it means, Honorable Chairperson, but I must also say that the beneficiaries of our regulations and interventions don't have a strong voice to show this appreciation. But we have to speak on their behalf as members of parliament, as representatives of the people. We need to actually show that appreciation for the many families that we managed to help. So those who purport to represent these voices try to nibble around the edges of big structural problems sometimes, and they play to the conscience of the disenfranchised and those who lost their jobs and their beloved families to COVID-19. So all we need right now, Honorable Chairperson, is not about having to bicker about who is doing better than the other and who's not doing right, but we all need the political governance clarity, intentional and well-meaning messaging to our people. So there will be challenges, Honorable Chairperson. There will be even more challenges for those of you who are not sitting back and doing nothing. But this too shall pass and posterity will be the judge. I want to take this opportunity, Honorable Chairperson, to thank you for allowing me to stand in for the minister and to open with this few words and to wish this portfolio committee well in its deliberations on the quarter three and quarter four of both CF and UIF. I thank you.
Thank you very much, DM. Thank you very much. We will then request the DG and if it to take us through, understand that it's going to be the compensation fund that is going to start. If they can, if they are ready, can they?
Good morning, Chairperson and the honourable members. The Commissioner Mafata is here. He's going to upload the presentation and he'll deliver the presentation. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Commissioner Mafata.
Thank you, Chairperson. The presentation, I'll start, Chair, with, there's two presentations. I'll start with the presentation of the quarter three of the compensation fund for the performance for the period up to December 2019. The preliminary information, Chair, is information that is known around the mandate of the compensation fund and the vision. So I will go straight to slide 11, Chair, which is where the performance of the fund starts. In the strategic plan for the MTSF period 2015 to 2020, contained two strategic objectives in the compensation fund. One was the providing effective and efficient client-oriented support, and the second strategic objective was providing fast, reliable, and accessible COIT services by the year 2020. We had a total of 9 indicators in the annual performance plan of the fund, and 6 of these indicators are the indicators which we were reporting against for quarter three. When we look at the first indicator, Chair, the first objective, the one indicator that was reportable by end of December 2019, we had achieved this indicator. I'll go to the details of it in the later slides. And the second strategic objective, we had 5 targets or indicators that had to be reported in quarter three. 3 of these were achieved, and 2 of them were not achieved, which takes us to a 60% achievement rate for this particular indicator. This is the indicator that is related to our core service delivery programs in the compensation fund. So that takes our performance to 67% for the period ending December 2019. In the next slide, Chair and honorable members, it's the breakdown of the performance per program. We have 4 programs in the structure of the compensation fund, with the 3 programs, COIT services, medical services, as well as orthotics and rehabilitation being the core programs, and then program 1 being the administration program, which provides then support to the core. When we break down the targets and the indicators per program, program 1 has achieved the indicator that was reportable for quarter three. In program 2, of the 2 indicators that were reportable for quarter three, 1 was achieved and 1 was not achieved. And in the medical services unit, we had 2 indicators also reporting, and 1 was achieved, 1 was not achieved. In the orthotics and the rehabilitation unit, there is 1 performance indicator which was achieved. So the second slide just provides a breakdown of how the compensation fund has performed over the financial year between the quarters 1 to quarter 3, just shows the increase in the performance of the fund over the financial year. As a lot of the indicators and targets were cumulative, and as we built up to the end of the financial year, the performance was also increasing. So the next slide just then talks to the individual indicators that, in terms of what those indicators are that were summarized in the summary slides. The first indicator that was reportable of the 6 chair was the one for implementation of the approved annual risk-based audit plan. We had a target that 70% of this plan must be implemented by end of quarter three, and 72% at the end of quarter three has been implemented. So this is the work that we do through the internal audit in assisting the fund to improve its control environment. The second indicator that was reportable, Chair, at the end of quarter three is indicator 2.1, which relates to 100% of all approved benefits need to have been paid within 5 days after their approval. The target here is 100%, and we were able to get to only 89% of all the approved payments paid within 5 working days, with the remainder being paid outside the 5 working days period, Chair. So we paid about 1.9 billion rands in by December against the target of having paid 2.1 billion within 5 days, Chair. I'll touch on the reasons on the later slides. The Other indicator that was reportable, Chair, was the percentage of claims adjudicated within 30 working days of receipt. About 91% of these were adjudicated within 30 days of having received the claims. As at end of December, about 85,000 claims had been received in the fund, and 77,000 of these claims had then been finalized and processed within the 30 working days of receipt. We also had medical invoices that we have to finalize and adjudicate and pay within 40 days of receiving them. The target here was 85%. We were able to then pay 70% of these, and this was one of the targets that we did not achieve. I'll also touch on the reasons later on. We had received 487,000 invoices by end of December, and 337,000 of these had been paid within the 40 days, with the remainder being paid outside the 40 days mark. And the indicators relating to pre-authorization of requests responded to within 10 working days. About 2,350 of these requests were received, and 2,295 of these were then responded to and authorizations provided within 10 working days of receiving the authorization, and the remainder also then outside the 10 days, but this is a target that was achieved. We also had a target relating to compliant assistive devices that need to have been responded to within 15 working days of receipt. We had about 809 receipts for requests for such devices. 764 were then responded to within the 15 days, which made us exceed the target by to about 94% of these were then responded to within 14 working days. Chair, the next slide just shows the performance in terms of the numbers and comparing the quarter three this year versus the quarter in the past year. I'll just go straight to the reasons, Chair. So, Chair, one of the decisions that we took, as members are aware, that 2019-2020 was the year in which we implemented, we were developing the new claims management system to replace the claims management system that the fund had been using, which had been cited in many Auditor General's reports and in some of the internal audits and investigations reports to be lacking in adequate controls to make sure that the fund pays the right claims to the right claimants, and there's adequate controls to eliminate the audit disclaimers that the fund had had over the years, as well as some of the bottlenecks in service delivery that had been caused by the ineffectiveness of the system. So during the quarter three, end of quarter two and quarter three was the period within which we were cutting over from the old system to the new system. So we took a decision in August already that with the new system and the improved controls that we had built in the new system, it was going to be able to address a lot of the issues that had been raised. But then we were cognizant of the fact that there's a lot of claims that have been in the system, both claims from the injured workers as well as the medical claims for those who treated the injured workers that were not containing the requisite information, which is what one of the reasons why there were weaknesses in some of the controls around it. And we wanted to make sure that when we cut over to the new system, we don't only take with us the claims that are correct, that have all the correct information. We're going to give everybody an opportunity to be able to correct the information that is not correct on the claims that have been submitted that we have not been able to attend to over the months and years because of them containing incomplete information. We know the challenge we've had was that we had a medical service provider submitting claims on behalf of employers only for the benefit of making sure that the medical claims are paid. And in some of those cases, you may find that you're only able to pay a portion of the invoices because you're also dependent on the employers to submit certain reports that if they're not submitted, it also doesn't unlock payments to the other providers. So that led to a lot of invoices that we would have left behind in the old system. And while it may have been good for the fund, because from a control point of view, we've taken everything that is correct, but we needed to make sure that because behind every claim, there is an injured worker behind it. So we gave an opportunity for everybody to then submit this information. So during the period August to middle of October, we were then working at cleaning this particular information. And when we cut over into the new system on the 14th of October, we then got our teams to start working on the old claims where we've now contained, we've received all the information that was needed to clean it up. So the impact of that is that it then slowed down our turnaround times because we then gave an opportunity for all the old claims to be attended to. And later in the year, we also then, in the financial year, we partnered with Business Unity South Africa to, flowing from the concerns that had been raised by a number of medical service providers around non-payment, to then, as part of the same process of trying to clean up the old data and make sure that we pay, we then worked with BUSA to on a project to make sure that we then clean up all these old invoices. So we have paid close to more than half a billion rands in a lot of these old claims that we've paid during the period November to end of May, and as a result of this particular project. So the impact of it is that we may have then been able to pay a lot of these invoices and pay off all the invoices and adjudicate all the outstanding claims. But because of the fact that these claims then fell outside the turnaround times that we had set on our performance targets, it has impacted on three targets that are related to payment of claims. The first one was on the paying benefits within 5 working days. As we indicated that we're able to pay 1.9 billion within 5 working days, as opposed to the 2.7 billion that was available and ready for payment at the end of quarter three, because a large number of the payments that we made then fell outside of the 5 days approval period due to this particular project. The finalization of invoices within 40 days, also the 70% that was achieved because a large number of the invoices, half a billion of the 1.8 billion that we've paid in medical claims for the financial year related to invoices from prior years that we then assisted to clean up working in this project with Business Unity South Africa to then make sure that we pay. And this was also our way of responding to the financial pressures that we know medical service providers would have been feeling during the lockdown to make sure that we unlock a lot of these invoices that had not been paid owing to outstanding information. So what we did, we then provided them with a template that allowed them to be able to populate all the missing information in the system, and then we manually processed these invoices before we uploaded them into the system to pay. The other indicator that was impacted by this decision that we took, Chair, was the at the end of quarter four, which I'll touch on, Chair, is the one that relates to the adjudication of claims. So the performance, Chair, on those three indicators, the subsequent slides are just the breakdown of the performance that I've highlighted. It just breaks it down per each of the province. If it's okay with the Chair, I'll take that as read, Chair, and wait for an indication whether I should go to quarter four report or I should pause for questions, Chair. Thank you.
I will suggest, honourable members, I can see the minister is here. I will suggest that we go to quarter four so that when we ask questions on both quarters in terms of the compensation fund. Thank you very much, Honorable Mafata. Mr. Mafata, you can go to quarter four of the compensation fund. Thank you. Did you pick that up? I see you.
Thank you, Chair. Okay, thank you, Chair. I'm beaming the quarter four report, Chair. Thank you, Chair. I will also go straight to slide 11, Chair, which is where the performance of the fund starts, or slide 10, apologies, Chair. Thank you, Chair. So this is the quarter four performance of the fund. This is the quarter four performance broken down. If you recall in the previous presentation, I spoke about the decision that was taken by the fund to allow an opportunity for claims to be cleaned so that we don't leave any of the claims behind in the old system where the injured workers are affected. So this has then had an impact on the performance of the fund by end of quarter four, as we were not able to then reach the most of the core targets in terms of paying and processing claims within the turnaround time that we had set for ourselves as a target for the financial year. So this has led to a 33% achievement of the indicators that we had, in program one, there was one indicator that was achieved and two of the indicators have not been achieved. And I'll speak on those when I get to the slide where we talk about the reasons. The program two, we had three indicators that were reportable by end of the financial year, and none of those three and all of them related to service delivery implications. And then the third one is also the medical services program, which we had two indicators. One was achieved and one was not achieved. Orthotics and rehabilitation, we had one indicator and the indicator was achieved, which is what makes up the 33% that was achieved. If I go to the next slide, just then breaks down the performance, showing it per each of the quarters of the financial year. It just shows the performance from quarter one to quarter four. In the next slide, it then just shows the different indicators in terms of what has been the percentage that was achieved and those that were not achieved. In the first one, 1.1, where we had the risk maturity level of the fund, the target that we had set for ourselves at the beginning of the financial year was that we needed to have this level increased to 5 from its original target. So this target was also not achieved. When we did the individual assessment or the independent assessment, it took us to a maturity level of 2.6. One of the changes we made around the management of this indicator was that for a long time we had been assessing the risk management unit function itself as an entity, and our risk management programs are in place, and it was giving us a high score. But when we assessed to look at the maturity level that we assess versus the control weaknesses that have been identified in previous audits and so on, it may mean that we need to make this particular measurement a bit more robust. So we then included a 360-degree assessment and not only look at the risk management unit as a function, but look at also the risk management as a culture implemented in the fund across all levels, from a clerical level all the way to senior management, and assess that in totality so that we can get an objective assessment of where are we in terms of maturity of our risk management implementation. So that's where we got to 2.62, Chair, which is below the target that we had set, but it gives us something to work on so that when we implement risk mitigation plans, we know what are the areas that we're going to improve on over the next financial year. The second one was on the implementation of the approved annual risk-based audit plan. We had a target of 90%. 92% of the plan was implemented. This was achieved, Chair. The third indicator that we had, which is an annual indicator that we're reporting only for the first time in quarter four, was that we had set an investment return target on the funds that we have that are invested through the Public Investment Corporation. The target that is set by the fund based on the investment mandate that we've given to the PIC was to achieve a return of CPI plus 2. When we monitor this target on a monthly basis, for the period up to end of February, we were on course to achieve this particular target. And during the month of March, Chair, we have a lot of things that happened in the country, that the sovereign downgrade of South Africa's debt rating, that had an impact on the stock markets as well as on the fixed income instruments that we had been investing in. Our investment portfolio took a huge knock, which resulted in us getting negative returns of 6.2 as opposed to getting the positive return of CPI plus 2 that we had hoped to achieve. We then also had the indicator relating to percentage of approved benefits paid within 5 working days. This is an indicator that we had said 100% of all the invoices and benefits that are approved needs to be paid within 5 working days. Because of the decisions that I highlighted earlier on around allowing claims to be processed and finalizing everything and suspending the processing and receiving of claims during the cut over to the Comvisa system, that has had an impact on the turnaround, as a lot of the claims that we then started paying post go live in October 2019, we were already outside the 5-day mark for a lot of those, and we then got to 80%. The percentage of active registered employers assessed, we have an assessment period between April and end of May, where employers are given an opportunity to submit return of earnings, and they get assessed so that they can pay the assessed levies that they need to pay for the financial year. The target that we had set was that all active employers, we needed 95% compliance levels. However, the compliance levels that we ended up in by the end of the financial year were sitting at around 52%. So 52% of all employers who are deemed active on the database of the compensation fund had complied and submitted return of earnings by the end of the financial year and have been assessed and paid the assessment levies. One of the things that we're doing to address this particular indicator is the partnership that we've established with the Inspection and Enforcement Services, because the Inspection and Enforcement arm of the department does all the compliance and inspection to or enforcement of compliance to the labor legislation, which includes the Compensation for Occupational Injuries and Diseases Act. There has been some payroll auditors that functions that have been created within IES that are then helping with the achievement of this particular target. The partnership also that we have in taking over the funding and allowing the department to be able to expand the pool of occupational health and safety inspectors that the department has is also going to help us to be able to start making a dent on these non-complying employers. The percentage of claims adjudicated within 30 working days. Also, this is a target that we had achieved in quarter three, but by the end of the financial year, as the quarter three and quarter four was the period within which we were then cleaning up all these claims and making sure that we deal with all the claims that have been submitted. The target that of 90% we were not able to reach, we got to 83%. The percentage of medical invoices. And maybe before I even go to the percentage of medical invoices. So out of the invoices, we had about 108,000 claims submitted to the compensation fund during the financial year 2019-2020. And we were able to deal with all the claims. However, not all of them were dealt with within the 30 working days of receipt. The percentage of medical invoices finalized within 40 working days. We received about 480,000 claims during the financial year, or medical invoices during the 2019-2020 financial year. And we were able to process a lot of these claims. 90% of these claims were processed and finalized in the financial year. However, because of the project that we had to try and help and clean up and pay all the old invoices after having worked with the medical providers to submit all the outstanding information that was preventing the processing and payment of these claims in the project that we had with Business Unity South Africa. That also then impacted on the turnaround times, because a lot of the claims that we were then paying were 2019, 2018, 2017 claims that had not been complete in the old system. So that impacted then on that 40 days turnaround time. We got to about 69%. However, we paid 1.8 billion rands in medical claims alone for the financial year 2019-2020. The percentage of pre-authorization requests that I responded to within 10 working days, we had a 97% achievement against the target of 85%. And the percentage of compliant requests for assistive devices, where also we had a target of 85%, and we achieved 93%. I must also add, Chair, then the quarter four was also the first quarter in which we had been fully utilizing the new Compisa system. So the project that we had of trying to deal with the old invoices, plus also then getting the users to be able to be comfortable with the system, also then also had an impact on how fast and we were able to move with some of the targets related to payment. For some, which were much more simpler, we were able to then make sure that we get to the target. And for others, it took us a bit of time to get there. So the subsequent slides doesn't just shows the the performance per each of the indicators. I'll just maybe move to just the. The budget, the next slides just show it per province, all the indicators that related to the core business in terms of which provinces were then, what are the percentages that each province contributed towards the performance that the fund has reported in its quarter four report. When we look at the financial performance, Chair, as at end of quarter four, when we conclude quarter four, it's end of March 31st, but we finalize our financial statements for the financial year at the end of May. And at that time, we then allow also for the billing that the department provides to the fund for the work that the department does on behalf of the fund in the provinces. So everybody who works for the compensation fund is employed by the department, and the department pays the salaries, and then the compensation fund reimburses the department for the salaries paid. With regard to procurement of goods and services in the provincial offices where the compensation functions are carried out, they then also bill the compensation fund for those costs. So what would happen with our program one is that most of the time we only get to a point where we have the final amount of what the department is going to bill from us at the end of May, when the department has also concluded their financials at the end of April. So as at the time when we were preparing the quarter four report, Chair, the spending versus the budget was sitting at around 47%. And this is the 47% spending against the achievement of about 33% on this particular program one itself. But when we present the annual report, Chair, the figures would have changed because we would have then taken into account the other expenditure that would then have been built post the end of quarter four. With regard to program two, we also then have, this is the budget that we provide for benefits that we pay, or compensation benefits, the temporary disability payouts, permanent disability payouts, as well as the transfers to pensions where we've assessed a permanent disability. We had a budget of about 936 million for this program, Chair. As at the end of quarter four, about 397 million had been paid out of the budget. The only thing that had not been taken into account at this stage is also then the actuarial provisions that we make for outstanding claims reserves, which also then also goes against, which is budgeted for under this particular item. And that's also one of those programs that we then finalize only towards the end of May, when we are in the stage where we submit the annual financial statements. When we present the annual report, this figure will also change from the 42% spending that we have to a much higher percentage. And the targets that we achieved in this program, as we indicated, none of the targets had been achieved, as all those related to the claims that we then had to process that related to the old periods. Number three, the budget also here, this is the budget for all the medical costs that we pay. And also this includes also the medical costs that we pay for the outstanding claims, as well as the active claims. So what we show here is the 1.3 billion that had been paid at the end of March. It then also excluded some of the actuarial provisions that we had, and also some of the payments that we made related to the Busa project that amounted to about half a billion. I indicated that the total payments for medical costs at the end of the financial year was sitting at 1.8. But at the point when we were finalizing quarter four, this is where we're sitting at 1.3 billion, which is about 44% of the budget spent. But once we factor in the actuarial provisions, these amounts will change. One of the things that we also won't see in the budget, Chair, is because of the accounting frameworks and the rules. So all the claims that are provided for as claims that would have been incurred in the current financial year but may have not been reported by the employers, or they've been incurred in the current financial year and registered with the fund but have not been processed to finality because of outstanding reports, we do an actuarial provision of those, and we carry that amount in the balance sheet. So when we do pay these invoices in the subsequent years, those amounts will not show as actual expenditure. So the amount of money that actually gets paid then is much higher than what we then report in our income statement as benefits paid for the year. The same thing also with the pensions. We have 25,000 pensioners that the compensation fund pays on a monthly basis. The amount of pensions that we paid in the current financial year is 1.2 billion rands. And this 1.2 billion rands will not reflect in these budgets because we also don't knock it off against the budget. The accounting rules require us to create a provision that we carry in the balance sheet as a capitalized pension values. And then every month when we pay pensions, we pay the pensions against that liability that is carried in the balance sheet. That's why you won't see it also here in the budget for when we talk about performance versus the budget. The last program, Chair, is the program four, which is the rehabilitation. During the financial year 2019-2020, we had just established the unit, and we were running pilot programs on both the clinical, social, as well as vocational rehabilitation. We had set a budget of 64 million rands, and we have been able to spend about 47 million rands of these 74% spending. This is a unit that also then achieved the one indicator that we had set for it, Chair. And now that the pilot is done of the vocational rehabilitation in the strategic plan for the MTSF 2020 to 2025, we actually have more comprehensive programs with regard to the rehabilitation, which then also increases the amount of targets that we've set for this particular program. Chair, that's where I will end my presentation. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mafata. Can we members take the presentation from UIF so that we in the time that we are having is the time that we are going to be more focusing on questions and engagement. Is that fine, honourable members?
That's fine, Chair.
Thank you very much. Nobody has got a problem with that. DG, is the Commissioner for UIF ready? If he is ready, can he start?
He is ready, Chair. Thanks. Commissioner?
Thanks, DG. Mr. Mafata will fly to the presentation for us, Chair. I'll go straight, Chairperson, to slide number five. Members and Chairperson and Deputy Minister, what we are reflecting on slide number five is an assurance to the Portfolio Committee that the UIF performance information was tested by internal audit. And what we are reflecting here is we have 15 targets in total for quarter three. We said we achieved 11, and we took it to internal audit, and they confirmed that, yes, indeed, 11 targets were achieved. We gave them also for quarter four, and they confirmed that, indeed, 12 indicators were achieved for that quarter. That's what this slide is about, Chair. Then if you go to slide six, in slide six, members and Chairperson, what we are reflecting here is just indicator per indicator. It does indicate that internal audit found each of our evidence that we submitted in support of the achieved targets as satisfactory, and therefore confirming that indeed the targets were achieved. This is on slide six and seven. The principle is the same, Chairperson, for each target. I'll just use one. Percentage of administrative expenditure as compared to revenue maintained. We submitted evidence to internal audit to review as a confirmation that we had achieved our targets, and they confirmed. So that's slide six and seven, Chair. Thank you. Then what I have also on slide eight, which will go to slide nine, Chair, is a similar confirmation, but this is a confirmation for quarter four. But also quarter four was audited, and internal audit gave us a deal of good health that we have indeed met the requirements of the technical indicator. This is also slide 9 and 10, members. Just that confirmation that we have indeed. The performance information was audited. Now, the key driver to have this performance information audited up front by internal audit is to make sure that come the Auditor General at the end of the year, reliance on the work done by internal audit, it will make it easier also for us, so that we're also able to address audit findings that are picked up by internal audit at a given time. I'll go to slide 12, Chair. In slide 12 is a risk assessment that we do every quarter when we're reviewing our targets. The key focus here, Chairperson, is to ask the Chief Risk Officer to look at our performance against targets and look at the potential emerging risk. If, for example, a target is missed, there could be a potential that we miss a target and therefore affect service delivery, or we miss a target and also affect the overall performance of the institution, and that will constitute an emerging risk. As you can see, if you look at the first one, that supporting documents differs with quarterly reports performance. That's what they looked at, and in quarter four, we fixed. Those were fixed. So as the audit finding, as the risk picked up an issue, we address it. And you can see that how risk and internal audit looks at evidence is not the same. Would the one person look at the potential risk inherent in the evidence supported, the other ones look at the link to the technical indicator. And that's what we're showing, Chair, in slide 13 and 14. I'll not go to each one of them, but just to give the portfolio committee assurance that the performance we're presenting here was tested by both the chief risk officer and the chief audit executive. Chair, I'll move them to slide 16 now. I'll move to slide 16 then to reflect on our quarterly performance trend. If you go to the next slide, the demo part. What we are reflecting, Chair, on this slide is a comparison of our performance last year and how we performed this year, and if there's any improvement compared to how we did last year. And if you look at quarter one, Chairperson, last year we were at 63%. By quarter one, same this year, we had improved by 10%. You look at quarter two, compared to last year, we improved by 17%. And look at the current quarter, that is our focus for today. Compared to last year, we improved by 4%. And then if you look at quarter four, compared to last year, we improved by 17%. Just to give the portfolio committee that there's been a general improvement overall in our performance for this financial year as compared to last year. Thanks, Dr. Moffat. Slide 18 is a repetition of this graph, except it takes it per strategic objective. What I'll do, Chair and members, I'll just go straight now to the detailed performance from slide 20. Slide 20, Mr. Mafate. Chair, on slide 20, what we are reflecting here is quarter three and quarter four is the percentage of administrative expenditure excluding APEX as compared to the revenue maintained. Here, the target is 15%. In quarter three, we achieved 12.5% against the target that means we had achieved. And in quarter four, we just made it. We achieved 15%. But generally, this target has been achieved throughout the quarters. And if you look at the percentage of valid invoices paid within 30 days, and once again, looking at the two quarters, we've achieved 100% in quarter three and 100% in quarter four. And we look at the next one in terms of our return on investment with our listed portfolio run by PIC. Our drive here was to have a return that is above the benchmark. And in quarter three, we were above the benchmark by 0.37%. That means we've achieved our targets. And then in quarter four, we are above the benchmark by 2.62%. So here, once again, the target was achieved. We'll go to the vacancy rate, slide 21. And once again, in with respect to the vacancy rate, the target for the year is 10%. But we need to reduce the target percent to less than 10%. In quarter three, we had dropped the vacancy rate to 7.6% and dropped it further in quarter four to 7.1%. And I think for the year, we also achieved this target, Chair. The next target on slide 22 is an integrated claims management system. This target, we missed it in both quarter three and quarter four. Slide 22, Mr. Mafate. We missed this target in both quarter three and quarter four. In the main, the key driver here that caused us to achieve this target, we're dependent on the handover report from the service provider we had appointed at the time who developed the solution. and we had requested an extension of this contract so that we are able to have the handover done. And once the handover was done, then we were hit by the lockdown to start with the programming. But it was already too late to start the reporting on this target. The process to bring the service provider to do the handover took longer than we anticipated. Therefore, we have rescheduled this target now to be able to achieve it by end of this financial year. This target is in business operations. Here, these are the targets that speak to service delivery. The first one is 90% of valid claims of unemployment benefits processed within 15 days. In quarter three, we achieved 94%. And in quarter 4, 93%, and achieved for the two periods. And when we look at the percentage of claims of the in-service, which is your maternity, illness, and adoption, the target was 90% within 10 days. In quarter 3, we achieved 93%, and in quarter 4, we achieved 92%, an overall achievement for both quarters. And the processing of deceased claims, the target was 90% within 20 days. We've achieved in quarter 3 by 96% and quarter 4 by 94%, 95%. On slide 24, we are looking at the processing of payments, payment statements, and here, once again, the target was 95% within 6 days. And quarter 3, we achieved 100%, and quarter 4, we achieved 99%. And the next one was creation of new registration document for companies, that this must be done within a day of receipt or 24 hours. The target was 95%. In quarter 3, we achieved 97%, and quarter 4, 96%. And that the last one on this slide is the percentage of compliance certificates issued within 10 days, 90% within 10 days. We achieved 94% in quarter 3 and 93% in quarter 4. And on the next slide, slide 25, the number of newly registered employers, the target was missed on both quarters, which is the quarter of December, November, and October, and also January, February, and March. What we've picked up here is most businesses tend to become inactive towards the end of the year, which is around October, November, and December. Some of them start to shut down, and there's little activity from businesses to register. And also, at the beginning of the year, January, February, and March, the economy started to take a different turn, including the downgrades. As a result, there were fewer newly registered companies that came to UI to register. And as a result, we missed this target. And we anticipate the plan for the next year is to even up the numbers such that in the middle quarters, we have a higher target and lower targets in the targets closer to the close of financial year where there's no activities in companies. Then the next one is the number of newly registered employees. Here we picked up substantially in quarter three. Our target was 450,000. We achieved 593,000 already. And by quarter four, the target was 600,000 for the year. This one is a cumulative target, and we surpassed the target by over 100,000 newly declared employees. And then the next slide is on number of UIF beneficiaries provided with learning opportunities. Here we meet the target in both quarters, though a slight pickup in quarter three with more additional people added to the training program. But in the main, this target we missed because we are busy reviewing our new training program. As a result of the renaming of the department and the refocusing of the labor activation, to focus more on introducing UIF beneficiaries into employment. So the focus is to drive training for employment as compared to training for people to have skills. And that shift has forced us to re-engage the service providers that we had already appointed to review their programs, to say our new mandate has changed, we need to review our relationship so that we refocus and focus more on ensuring that the people that we are now going to be training, we must train them and plug them into employment opportunities, especially given the economic conditions in the country right now. The next target here in quarter three, we missed it at 85% within 15 working days, and we recovered in quarter four to 92%. Chair, at this point, I'm going to invite the CFO, is with us, Ms. Puzi, to talk to us about quarter four financials.
Good morning, honorable members. If we can then just move to slide number 28. Slide number 28, where we are now depicting the financial performance of the fund. If we look at the presentation, can we move to slide number 28? Yes. Thank you very much. If we look at the budget for the quarter one, we have a program one where we have set aside a 1.2 billion and we only spend it on program one in quarter three, and the spending there was 81%. In quarter four, the budget there, you'd note that the budget is now 2.6 billion. This is cumulative. And the spending there was about 1.4 billion, which then resulted in a underspending of about 45%. We spent 55% there. And what is sitting in program one is your admin expenses, where we also have salaries, that is compensation of employees. We have underspent there in that we have set some money aside for some contract workers that we're going to assist in the labor activation. So the main reason for the underspending there was the budget that was set aside for those posts that could not be filled within. We also embarked on a cost where we cut down on over. So these are for the under. And then again, in court, and we say, you also know that the budget also increases because it's cumulative. It moves from 12.6 billion to 22.3 billion, and then we spend 10.9 billion, underspent by 11 billion, resulting in a 49% spending. The main reason the program two relates to the payment of our claims. If you recall, members, that in 2017 you had approved the amended UIF. So even the implementation, we took time to implement the act. So last year or during this period, quarter four, we had set money aside for our beneficiaries to come and claim their benefits. If you recall, one of the amendments to improve our benefits was on the unemployment, where we had improved our benefits from 8 months to 12 years, I mean to 12 months. So we had increased our budget in anticipation that people would come and claim those money. So the understanding is honestly around the benefits then. Program three, quarter 3, we had set aside 1.4 billion. We spent about 615 million under spending by or spending 43% in our budget, and the spend water nation budget, where we are training the training layoff scheme is also part of that budget. So you'd also note that there is an improvement in terms of the spending from quarter three to quarter four when it comes to labor activation programs. And this was as a result of the interventions that the Director General had put in place to ensure that we move fast when it comes to the training layoff scheme and processing of those claims. Honorable members, if I'll also focus on the economic classification, if you look at the budget itself, it is the same as the in terms of the programs, but on this paragraph, we're just breaking it down in terms of economic classification. As explained before, you note that on compensation of employees, we have underspent there. We have only spent 86% of the budget that was set aside. And mainly it's because of cost-cutting measures when it comes to overtime, as well as some vacancies that were still outstanding, as well as money that was set aside for contract workers to assist with labor activation. On goods and services, we also note that we have spent 82%, and we have underspent them by about 18%. And the main reason there is due to cost saving, one, and number two, it is also due to the commission that we pay to SARS as well. We pay a certain percentage of contributions that, and based on the projected revenue that we had projected, we ended up collecting each other a direct inquiry. On CAPEX, you'd also note that on the CAPEX is your capital expenditure. We have underspent there we spent only 22% of the budget then. And that is directly linked to the SAP system, or rather, if you look at the performance of the fund, there's an indicator there that we did not meet, that is on the integrated claims system. And that is the main reason that we did not spend there. We could not implement or develop the system and implement it within the third time frame. Hence, there is underspending there. On the transfers, that is where we pay our claims and labor activation. So the underspending there, we have hugely underspent because we had anticipated that beneficiaries that were paid and underpaid due to, or rather, we paid them for 8 months and not 12 months, would then have to pay them in quarter four. So I think we also had over budgeted today because we anticipated that now that we've got an amended act, people would come back and claim what is due to them. Honorable members, I'm not going to be taking you through the notes that have been the variance reason because I've already presented to those two members. Thank you very much, members.
Thank you very much, DG and the commissioners. We are then now going to, I'm then now going to allow members to ask questions, clarities, and comments, and we will then allow time because I would appreciate if we know that people must not ask questions I will observe the flow and check if we can break that so that we allow members to ask questions, but also allow the department to respond on the majority of questions that we may have asked. I will now just to get people, the members who want to ask questions.
Michael Bagram.
Honorable Bagram.
Michael Cardo.
Honorable Cardo.
Honorable Dana.
Honorable Dana. I'm still waiting. Are there any other people who want to, members who want to ask questions? Come again.
Honorable Inanna.
Honorable Inanna.
Honorable Klangweni.
Honorable Klangweni.
Honorable Ntabe.
Honorable Ntabe.
Nonsele.
Honorable Nonsele.
Honorable Ngabane.
Honorable Ngabane. All right, honorable members, we will take that order. Honorable Bagram.
Thank you. If I may go ahead, thank you very much. First of all, for the compensation fund, I note that they're trying to improve their controls, but during that period, the majority of private doctors refuse to treat compensation fund patients. I can't explain it because they said they never get paid. And in fact, I deal with doctors every day who just never get paid. And, of course, the people who suffer are the employees who can't get access to these doctors, and maybe they can explain. I also keep writing to the compensation fund about the individual employees who just somehow never get paid. And again, I don't get responses. So maybe the compensation fund can answer me on this, because it's all during that time of the quarter that they were speaking about. With regard to the UIF, we know that the Auditor General 2 days ago closed down the UIF payments completely. Also know that it's because they believe that there have been so many past transgressions. And I don't know if maybe we can answer whether those past transgressions refer to the quarters that they're reporting on, or is it more fraud now, internal fraud, what's happening now, or is it way back from those quarters that were reported on? And who have they suspended with regard to all those problems from the Auditor General? And then I see that they're wanting to change their focus on creating employment opportunities, when in fact they can't even do what they're supposed to do in the first place, and that is pay out people who need the UIF payments. I'm not sure why they're trying to change their focus. So thank you for that opportunity.
Ricardo?
Thanks, Chairperson. I've got two questions. Firstly, to the unemployment insurance. It's crystal up exactly why TERS payments have been suspended. Obviously, there's a lot of desperation and uncertainty and confusion among workers out there at the moment because payments have been completely halted. So we need to know why that is the case, and also if you are able to give us an indication when TERS payments will resume. Then secondly, to the compensation fund, my question involves medical invoices, 70% of which were paid within 40 working days in quarter three, and 69% of which were paid 40 working days in quarter four.
and you ascribe this to the fact that there's been a delay in implementing the Comp Easy system during court, as well as associated challenges. This sounds to me.
Sorry, Honorable Kado. I don't know whether it's echo or whatever. You keep on cutting. There are issues that I don't pick up when you are talking. I'm not quite sure. Can you?
Okay, I'm going to turn my camera off. Maybe that'll make things better.
Yes, I'll appreciate that.
So my question to the compensation fund is about the finalization of invoices within 40 working days, 70% of which were finalized in quarter three, 69% in quarter four. And the compensation fund explains this in one slide by saying that there's been a delay in the full implementation of the Comp Easy system in quarter three. There are challenges with processing staff utilizing the new system. Not all staff have completed the training, which enables them to make use of Comp Easy. This sounds to me much like an admission of failure and the fact that there are serious challenges with the Comp Easy system, which have up till now been soft pedaled by the compensation fund. But my question really is, one central service provider representative, which represents the over 2,000 medical service providers, CompSol, says that the compensation fund currently owes it more than 700 million rand in unpaid invoices. And bear in mind that CompSol manages around about 40% of all quota cases in South Africa. I also believe there's a court order requiring the compensation fund to pay or reject, with valid reasons, medical invoices within 75 calendar days. My question is, how much money in interest and legal fees has the compensation fund racked up by disputing these matters in court? And how many legal actions are there currently against the fund involving paid medical invoices? Thank you.
Are you done, Honorable Kado?
I'm done, thank you.
Honorable Dana?
Thank you, Chair. I'll keep my camera switched off so you can hear me clearly. My first questions are for the compensation fund, and some of them have partially been covered by the other colleagues, but I just want to know how many invoices or claims are there still to be merged or transferred from the Umhlungu system to Comp Easy? And then also, has a technical or system support unit been set up to assist people who struggle with the Comp Easy system to log claims and load invoices, etc.? And then to the UIF, it's been mentioned that the AG has closed down all UIF payments. I also saw Nihasa stated that all UIF payments have been suspended. I'd just like to know until when will UIF payments be made again, and what is the current value of the UIF's investment portfolio? Thank you, Chair. That's all.
Thank you, Honourable Dana. Honourable Inan.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Yes, continue on.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you, Chairperson. Let me just as well welcome the presentation by our commissioner. Chairperson, the question that I want to raise to the compensation fund, in particular, Commissioner Mogat, is that there is an overwhelming evidence that since 2019, the unemployment rates rose from 26.55% to 30.1% to date. Now, on page 7, quarter 3, internal audit review, number 12 and number 13, it says that the number of newly registered employees per year is 70,000. and the number of the newly registered employees by the fund is 600,000. Now, my question is that how can we get a clear understanding whether these people that are now becoming the responsibility of the compensation fund and UIF are the results of this unemployment rate that is increasing? Because other times you will hear that the unemployment rate is so high, but others would reflect and say that it is not the case. Now, is number 12 and number 13 confirming that there is an unemployment rate that is so high and out of control? And how does, therefore, the UIF manage to compensate the people when the offices 2 days ago were closed by the Auditor General? Thank you, sir.
Honorable Tlangwini.
Thank you very much, Chair, and thank you for the presentations. Chair, mine is also just to also add to the ones that have also asked about the payments that were stopped, the TERS payments and the UIF payments, if we also can get an indication as to when will it be reinstated and payments will be made available again. Because we know that there are many people that are depending on these payments for their livelihoods, and their lives will be sort of go in disarray if they don't receive the payments that they have budgeted upon. And if it's due to the corrupt elements that is in the system or misused elements that needs to be dealt with quite urgency it deserves. And we will expect also the department, because we need to start seeing cases open and individuals taken to account, not only a lip service, Chair, because our people do suffer from these not getting the benefits that they deserve, that is deserved towards them. So really, we need to have a close look into that aspect, Chair and Commissioners. Mine is also just on the compensation fund, on the underspending on program one. Is it program one or program two? There's an underspending of 34%. And because I'm taking you back to slide 27, I think you didn't go through that slide. I think you stopped at slide number 15, just before the provinces, the layout of the provinces. So I went through all of the other slides, the expenditure versus the performance slide. So there on that slide, on various of the programs, it states the percentages that is underspending. And really, and one can hear to the explanations thereof, but we really need to rework and ensure that we don't have such a huge amount of percentage of underspending, because that really doesn't reflect good on the performance of the compensation fund and the department. So really, we need to ensure that this doesn't reoccur again. And then my question there of Chair, I just want to check and trace on the underperformance on the expenditure versus the performance. Is this was this happening also in the first or second quarter, or is it only now, so that we can check and trace the reoccurrence of that? And then yet again on the part of the, that is the only one that I'm going to ask on quarter three on compensation fund. And then on the UIF one is the vacant positions. Really, we need to start really, I mean, I can't
by the life of me, understand that we are still reporting on vacant positions and we don't find or employ people in these positions. What is this position that people we don't ensure that people are employed in this position? 46 vacant positions and in one, and then the other one I didn't note on which areas it is, but the department will know exactly on which point of the presentation. And then also as well, again, yet again, on the underspending. No wonder then that National Treasury can just take money easily away from the department because they are clearly failing to spend some of the money that is at their disposal. So we really need to try working hard on your underspending and see what is the real reasons. Maybe perhaps we can sit maybe also with capacity problems in the department. Let's just please sort it out so it doesn't reoccur next time. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Nhlanhla. Honourable Mdabe.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chairperson, and good morning to Honourable Members, the Minister, Deputy Minister, NDG and staff.
Sorry, Honourable Mdabe. Can Honourable Yinana mute, please?
Okay.
Sorry, you may continue, Honourable Mdabe.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Chair, on the compensation fund, claims received in the third quarter, it's 85,000, and claims paid, it's 77,000. Invoices received, almost 400,000. And then claims paid, 337,000. Chair, I think it was last year when we asked that we need to be given a report, and that report is still outstanding. On claims of injured workers and from which sectors of industries or the economy, those that have been paid and in which category of the economy or sectors of the industries are these injured workers? How much has been paid to middlemen? How much has been paid to the health institutions? And how much has been paid to the injured worker? That report hasn't been furnished to us till to date. May I ask Chairperson that we be provided with that report? Secondly, can we therefore be provided with the report of the internal governance structures of the compensation fund in relation to their performance plans or non-performance thereof? Like what UIF did. What UIF did, they then presented their a performance plan to the internal governance structures. They did their audit, both the internal audit and the audit committee, and then provided them with the report in terms of what have they then discovered, either as risk, high, medium, and low, whether those achieved and non-achieved targets have evidence in relation to what has been done. To UIF, Chair, in my constituency, Pinetown Labour Centre doesn't have a manager. It's almost 3 years now. Yet there is a vacancy rate. There are people who are acting, taken from other centres to go and act there. And that Labour Centre services close to about 9,000 unemployed people. It's highly congested. And in its location, where it is currently located, it's not conducive for servicing our people. They stand in the sun, they stand in the rain, they stand in the wind. It's unbearable condition. Secondly, the tools of trade for the workers that are working at home, they don't have them. If they have a rotational system in terms of who should be at work and who shouldn't. Now, those that are not at work, it means whenever they are at home, they are sitting doing nothing because they don't have tools of trade. And that there is an underspending on CAPEX, on which I believe that that money should have been used to assist the workers of the labor center or of the department to be able to do and perform tasks while they're at home. Those are the three questions that I have, Chair. Thanks.
Thank you, Honorable Mugabe. Honorable Nomsele.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Morning, Honorable Minister, Honorable Deputy Minister, DG and the Commissioners, Honorable Members as well, I greet you all. Again, let's just extend our message of condolence to our colleague and friend and comrade, the late comrade Hisham Mohammed. May his soul rest in peace, our dear comrade. Chair, Honorable Mugabe has covered one part of my question that relates to stats, the totality that do not correspond. I would not repeat that question. The two points in addition to that, I would want to request: can we be given, in line with the report that has been given in terms of the compensation fund, just a breakdown, Chairperson, on the numbers that have been helped since the cooperation with the Business Unity South Africa, which is something that we appreciate, but we would want to get the numbers, the breakdown. If those numbers are not available now, can they be available, even if they are sent in writing, so that we look at them? Like, for instance, there were quite huge numbers of service providers that were excluded because they could not comply with the new IT system. How many of those that have since been compliant, and how many of those that were not compliant, that is, since the cooperation with the Business Unity of South Africa? Similarly, the cost involved in that exercise, so that we are able to get the global picture as well. Hence the point that was raised. The reason that I'm asking for the cost is that in terms of the report currently, that it is in fact coupled with the stats that we already are given. So we are unable to say exactly the numbers. So if, for instance, that kind of report can be made separately, it would be helpful. The second point relates to the points that are raised by Honorable Bagram. The area of concern, and I want in this moment also to share with Honorable Bagram's efforts that we almost on a daily, not very much so, as to how and where they do happen. And want to invite Honorable Bagram as well to help us move with him by submitting a consolidated list of all the service providers that are approaching him, including the amounts involved per each service provider. Because these are going to be helpful for us, so that tomorrow as a committee, we're able to say on all these outstanding matters, we've been finally be able to read from the same picture or from the same information or source of information, so that we're able to address all of them. Because it's not helpful for us to continue to be at each other's throat because we are here to serve the people. So if there is an area of slacking on the part, for instance, of the administration, as the committee, we have a responsibility to, in fact, in terms of our responsibility as oversight people who are responsible, so that we are able then to resolve those questions. My honest then proposal chair is that we should ask Honorable Bagram to provide us with that list so that we can make collectively with him those outstanding matters, a follow-up, and ensure that the matters are laid to rest once and for all. If they are unresolved, then we, in fact, collectively move together so that we don't continuously sit with claims and counterclaims on the same matter. Yeah. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Honorable Nontele. Honorable Nkaban?
No, thank you, Chairperson. I'm partly covered by the issues raised by my colleagues, Chairperson. One, let me start by greeting the Minister, the GM, the Commissioners, and the Honorable Members present in the meeting, Chair. Chairperson, what I want to get from the NDT, the UIF Chair, or the Department of State, is there any risk management tool or monitoring tool on the dispersed funds to the employers in like ensuring that it reaches the vulnerable sectors of our economy? You know why, Chair, I'm raising this issue is that I've received a call from the farmers in Melmo, the Chair, who are working in the farm there, and they are claiming that their employer has claimed from the UIF, but they did not get anything, and the employer is playing hide and seek. So what I want to get is that if they disperse these funds, is there any monitoring tool to ensure that it reaches the vulnerable sectors of our economy, or they just disperse the funds and they do not do any follow-up? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you. To the UIF, I would want to check, and maybe the minister will then be able to advise or correct. I think it's about time that we reflect. We are receiving a number of calls from workers that are claiming that the employer has been paid and he or she has not been paid. Can those employers be exposed? I'm raising this because that falls within the ambit of them being corrupt. How do you claim money for your workers? The next thing, you don't claim them, you don't pay them.
Exactly.
I think what we need to, what I want to put to the meeting, that's why I'm saying maybe the minister will respond on this. My proposal, minister, is that it's about time that those employers be named and shamed. I'm raising this because we are very loud about the corruption in the public sector, correctly so. But it's about time now that we balance that with the corruption that is in the private sector, because all these employers are in the private sector. Everybody must be exposed, even if it is corruption within the department for that matter. But everybody now is to be exposed, because we can't be seated here and argue all the time about the this not being done, this not being done, when in fact maybe some of those are companies that we know. And that must be exposed, Minister. That's why I'm putting that squarely on your door, that it's about time. It's about time. If there is something that is creating a problem about that, I think if if corruption in the public sector is exposed to this, up to this level and this amount, which I don't have a problem in the public, in the private sector, it's about time that those companies are exposed. So that's why my question, my proposal is they must be named and shamed. It's about time. I will hand over then to the DG, the commissioners, to respond, and we see if we can't have another round, if possible, of questions. As long as members are not going to repeat the same things that they asked. Over to you, DG, and your team.
Thank you, Chairperson. The commissioners will respond to the number of questions that require their technical knowledge, Chairperson. I want to respond to just few questions. In fact, two. One is a question relating to the COVID test benefit payments being suspended by the AG. That's not correct. AG did not suspend, or neither did they stop the COVID-19 test benefit payment. It is true that AG came and they conducted an audit, as it is customary that they would do, and for that matter, this is one of the things that we spoke about from the very word go when we came up with this COVID test benefit, that part of the agencies that will engage to ensure that money goes to where it's supposed to go, and that they are on a regular basis checks and balances on our control environment in as far as the ICT systems that we're using as concerned. So AG came, they did an audit and provided us with preliminary audit findings and obviously engaged the department, in this case, the Unemployment Insurance Fund, engaged the minister, engaged myself. As it is normal, AG would put recommendations whenever they've made some findings. So, and then they will expect that the accounting officer would act on those recommendations. So, that's where we are now with the recommendations of AG. So, AG never stopped a unemployment insurance fund payment. And you'll also remember that during the course of the disbursement of the COVID test benefit, whenever we've picked up that there's a control witness on the system, we will delay payment, address that deficiency, and then release payment. So this is exactly what we've done with the audit, with this. Once AG has indicated that there are areas where we have witnesses, we have indeed suspended payment, and not because we're instructed by AG, but because from time to time we have to look at the control witnesses that either identified by AG or identified by ourselves. Now, when is the payment going to, when are we going to resume payment? The instruction to resume payment was issued yesterday by the commissioner. So payment is being processed as we speak. Now, there are a number of, I think, questions that were raised with regards to, control witnesses and and what is it that we are doing as a department. As I indicated, AG provides us with recommendations, and we therefore have to act on those recommendations. And we are indeed acting on those recommendations. We have, in fact, even before AG pronounced on a number of these things, we have started engagement with GTEC, which is an agency which is located at National Treasury, to assist us with doing some data analytics to look at the quality of the data that we have on the system, so as to make sure that we pay the right people. So that work is underway, and also the minister instructed me that given the number of the issues that have been raised previously, honourable members will remember that there were stories regarding or related to fraudulent activities that involved a number of companies that applied for benefits, and the funds ended up in the accounts of the former workers of those companies. On the basis of that, the minister instructed me that I must conduct a forensic investigation, and that also was confirmed by the findings of recommendations of the AG that further investigation needs to be done in certain areas. So that's what we are seized with, and we've started with that. And secondly, minister reported this a number of these issues to the SIU, and they've already started doing the work to make sure that all gaps that have been identified by AG and the possibility of fraudulent activities having taken place are dealt with. So we will make sure that the outcome of the investigations are implemented as they should be. Also, there's an issue raised by Honorable Nhlanhla Chairperson that I just want to indicate that the operating budget of the two funds does not come from FISCAS. So the operating budget of the two funds comes from the revenue that they generate. So a certain percentage of that, of whatever they generated in the form of the, or through the revenue that they collect, they take 15 to 20% of that as operating budget. So National Treasury cannot and has not taken money from these two entities because they don't get money or funding from the FISCAS. I'll ask the commissioners to respond to the direct questions that were raised by honourable members. I just wanted to clarify those three areas. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Mr. Mafata. And then you'll be followed by Mr. Muruping.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, honourable members, for the questions. Chair, I will deal with the questions in the order that they came. Responding to Mr. Bagrem and honourable Bagrem and honourable Kado, the two questions are somehow linked. I'll respond to them. Chair, I think one thing that we've always explained over the years, that the submission of an invoice by itself to the compensation fund does not necessarily make it payable. There are conditions on which an invoice is payable. Number one is that there must be a claim accepted by the compensation fund for an invoice to be payable. For some invoices also, they need to be accompanied by a report, medical report from a doctor. So we have the first medical report, which enables us to be able to make a decision on whether we accept liability for a claim or not, We have progress medical reports if the injured worker is going through medical treatment over the life of the claim. And then we also have a final medical report that the medical provider submits. So at certain stage gates, the service providers, so the medical service providers, would then have to submit progress medical reports and final medical reports that should be accompanying the invoices for the invoices to be paid. There are some procedures as per the gazetted rules of the compensation fund with regard to medical claims, where for certain procedures you need pre-authorization. So for invoices that come in, there must already be, for certain specific procedures that are coded, there should be a pre-authorization that should have preceded the submission of an invoice or even the actual procedure being undertaken on the injured worker. So a lot of these things, so an invoice coming into the fund doesn't make it payable. It has to comply with those. And in a number of areas where, for example, we've had complaints where the compensation fund has not paid invoices, we did a demonstration to the honorable members when they were here. And a fortunate thing is one of the invoices that we were demonstrating, because we demonstrated on the live stream, actually saw that certain invoices, we could not even process them further because it gave a message that there is no progress medical report for this invoice. So, and this is the whole process that would pay. We would not pay an invoice if it doesn't comply with some of the rules. Now, in the old Umehluko system, the problem we had with it was, which was one of the weaknesses in the controls, is that the system allowed all invoices to come into the system, irrespective of what the nature of the claim is and whether some of these conditions have been complied with or not. And then you would have a situation where you're sitting with these invoices, it's not being paid because it doesn't comply with the requirements, and then you also have then the service providers complaining that they submitted invoices to the fund and the invoices are not being paid. Meanwhile, they can see the status of the invoice themselves because it was an online system that allowed them to be able to see what is why the reasons why an invoice or a specific invoice would not be paid. And these are some of the issues that we've dealt with over the years. So how we've done it differently with the CompEasy system, these are things that we gazetted well in advance during the life of the project, that with the new system, these are going to be the requirements that needs to be met by a medical provider when they submit an invoice, failing which the system will not accept it. So it will not even allow the invoices to come and sit in the system while it's waiting for all this information to be provided. And it would reject it outright. Things like where there is no liability accepted for a claim, there is no claim registered. If a invoice is for a certain procedure and that procedure is linked to a pre-authorization, if there is no pre-authorization number linked to the claim or the medical invoice, it will not accept the invoice. If there is no medical reports provided, also it will not allow the claims process us to be able to process this invoice to go any further. Now, coming to the issues of console, I don't know where the 700 million comes from. In fact, console is one of those service providers that have been paid through the project that we've had. I have confirmation of emails even from console where they're confirming the amount that they've submitted as part of the project that we were running with BUSA, that these are the amounts that are owing to them. And we've paid. I'll come to the numbers in terms of how much we've paid Comsol as part of this project. I indicated earlier on that when we cut over to CompEasy, we took that decision that we're going to try and help to clean up all the old claims that are on the outside system, on the other system, so that we don't leave them out. Because if we leave some of these medical claims out, these are medical claims that are linked to injuries of actually injured workers. So we will not be doing any justice to anyone if we leave this. If there's information that is outstanding that did not allow for these invoices to be carried over into CompEasy, we're going to work on a manual process to try and get this information from the medical providers, populate the information. We had a pre-designed template. And once that information has been submitted, we will then manually process these invoices. And once they are ready for payment, we'll then upload them into the system so that the system can then be able to pay them. When we started with this project in November, it was before we brought in, before BUSA came on board. Between the period October, November, December, we paid about 431 million rands. And out of this 431 million rands that we paid to different providers, Comsol was paid 130 million of it. When we then partnered with, following our appearance in the in the portfolio committee, the minister gave an instruction that we need to then have a discussion with all the stakeholders that are that have grievances and the issues that they had raised when we were in the committee in February. And the DG convened a meeting with the representatives of these medical providers through BUSA, which is the meeting that took place around April. And we agreed a process which was going to follow the same process that we had followed in November, December to pay some of those invoices. We provided templates and we said, this is the information that you need to provide to allow us to be able to then process these invoices and start paying it. Out of that project, Chair and Honorable Members, what we have paid between April and now is about 467 million rands, which brings to a total of about 890 million that has been paid through this process, this particular project. In the second tranche, now having working through the BUSA project, COMSOL itself was paid close to 100 million. Now, in total, all service providers have benefited from this process that we've done. And these are payments over and above the normal payments that we've processed and paid through CompEasy and the ones that we would have paid in Umehluko prior to 18 September 2020. So the service providers that have benefited out of these particular projects are about more than or close to 5,000 medical service providers that have been paid, be it directly or through the intermediaries such as COMSOL, Coidlink, and the other intermediaries that do this work on behalf of the medical service providers. The project is ongoing. As we get the information, the team processes it manually. We do the analytics. Business Unit South Africa in partnership has provided us with additional resources that are helping to make sure that they become point of contact between the medical service providers and the fund in receiving information and analyzing this information and paying. Now, what the likes of intermediaries like COMSOL and others got away with in the past, Chair, was the fact that they could submit their invoices and write their own checks. What I mean with this is that the service providers would pre-fund or buy an invoice from a medical service provider. And at the same time, the very same intermediary registers the claim. So we must look at allowing a medical service provider or any person to be able to register a claim on behalf of an employer without even authentication that this person represents the employer. So what would then happen is that these intermediaries would then register these claims that would then link up with the invoices that they have pre-funded that they need paid on. And all what was needed was for a claim to exist. And once the claim exists, they would then run to the court and say that we've submitted invoices for this particular claim and the compensation fund has not paid. Now, I don't want to discuss much about the legal issues we have with COMSOL because their matters, our matters with them are before the court. And they would then rely on a agreement that was entered into with the fund in 2009 related to specific cases that were before the court at the time. What the courts have allowed them to do is to utilize this agreement that we, in our view, is not valid to take legal action against the fund. The matter is before the courts. We have this issue being attended to by the state attorney to make sure that we reverse some of these orders that have been issued, as well as the this particular order that COMSOL relies on. With regard to with the COMSOL issue. So in our presentation, we also not what we are acknowledging is that this is a new system. All of our right to be helpful to pay in the way the mature person our claim to be migrated. Because of this, we were able to make sure that we don't leave any claim in the way. We have migrated close to 1.2 million claims from Umehluko into CompEasy. Now, we have gone through a number of system implementations of the compensation fund. One key issue that has always contributed to bottlenecks to service delivery has been the fact that every time the fund implements a new system, it's as if we're starting a new fund from scratch. There will be no migration of data from the old systems, and as a result, the fund will then be crippled, and it will take months before the fund could even pay a single claim. What we've done different with the CompEasy project is that we allowed that process of data migration and cleaning of the data so that it goes into the system so that when the system is switched on, we're able to start processing from that point on. When we present the quarter one reports, Chair, for 2019-2020, we'll present the statistics of, because of this decision, how CompEasy has been effective in making sure that we continue to register claims, adjudicate, and pay since we've gone live in October, November, Chair. And once again, I'll reiterate, we pay claims those that meet the requirements as has been specified in the gazettes that we published to medical providers to say this is the rules that are going to be in place once the new system is in place, and they need to get themselves ready for this particular rules. So the service providers that are complying and where the invoices are correct, those are being paid, Chair. As to how many invoices have been paid, I think we'll provide this information as well when we then present the quarter one reports that would indicate what has been the level of productivity. For example, we have had close to more than 190 or so thousand invoices that we've processed in CompEasy to date. Equally so, because of the stringent rules that we've implemented, we've had close to 170,000 invoices rejected from even going into the system because they did not comply and qualify to the standards that we set for them to be valid invoices that should go into the system. As to whether the other 700 million that COMSOL talks about is in those invoices, I don't know, Chair, but I don't know where the amount comes from. Chair, I think the DG has spoken to the issue of the understanding, and I've also highlighted the fact that what we don't have in the quarter four reports was the other outstanding claims reserves, the processes that we do through the actuaries, which we finalize only at the end of May, which will be included when we present our annual report in terms of what has been the total spend on the different programs versus the budget that we had set, because it excludes those items in the current report that we've presented. We take note of Honorable Ndabe's request as well, Chair. We'll adhere to it. We had limitations with Umehluko in terms of how we can get data according to the specifications that are wanted. But we take note of these specifications and we'll make sure that we'll start working on these reports. We certainly do have even reports in terms of which service providers have been paid, where they're using middlemen. That's why I was able to even highlight some of the figures that we've paid to the one service provider that was mentioned by Honorable Caro. And so that information we can be able to provide. And one thing, Chair, it's a departmental standard that all quarterly reports, before they are presented to the governance structures in the department or even within the entities, needs to have gone through an audit process. So the quarterly reports that we present to the portfolio committee are audited quarterly reports, Chair. We've taken into account all the issues. What we did not do, like the UIF, is to highlight that fact in the presentation, which is something that we'll then do in future presentations. Honorable Nonsel asked about the project with Business in South Africa and also the numbers and so on. I've highlighted more than 5,000 medical service providers have benefited from this particular project in terms of the payments that we've made over the last few months. And this is an ongoing project, as I indicated. The objective is to make sure that any of the outstanding claims that may have been in the old systems and are not in CompEasy, and we get the corrected information, we'll then be able to then pay this information for these claims through that particular process. Thank you very much, Chair. I think I've responded to all the questions.
Thank you, Honorable. I'm sorry. Thank you, Mr. Mafata. UIF?
Thank you, Chair. I think the DG has answered the main question around the payments. Let me go straight, Chair, to the issue around the current portfolio and where it sits. As at 31st March, members were sitting at 160 billion rands, and the fund has now moved down as at 31st of July to 120 billion rands. This is a result of us paying just over 40 billion rands in COVID test benefits. And I think, Chair, it's likely to drop even further as we pay for the remaining 2 months, the COVID benefit. So it may drop even below, it could go just up to 110 or maybe slightly below 100, depending on how the markets perform. And then, Chair, there was a question raised by Honourable Yenana on the vacancy rate. No, Honourable Ntanguini, my apologies, Chair. Yes, the vacancy rate with the 46th position. I think what has been the challenge to date has been the movement within the department, where you find people move from URF to compensation fund or to the main department, or sometimes they get promoted and move out of the department, or sometimes it's exit. But I think what we're trying to manage now is try as far as possible not to keep the vacancies longer than 2 months, so that as soon as the position is vacant, within the first month you advertise, and then you allow the person to serve the notice. So that's what we are driving now, that these vacancies must not be old, sir. But we'll keep monitoring these vacancies such that it drops further, even below the 7.1% that we've reported. Honourable Ndawe has raised a question around the Pantown Labour Centre. Sir, can I take it upon myself to go and investigate what is happening in this labour centre, and also look at the vacant position on where we are in terms of filling the position? In as far as the tools of trade, Chairperson, we were discussing this just last week in the CMT, that the ICT is going to put together a project plan to make additional tools of trade available for the remaining of the staff. Because in the beginning of the pandemic, we had procured laptops and made them available for some staff members to be able to function from home. But there was a bit of a shortage. And because of the lockdown, some of the companies where we procured these laptops, they have to bring them from overseas. So there was a delay in terms of bringing some of the instruments. But we are hoping by the time we meet again, we would have resolved the issue of tools of trade for staff members to be able to work from home. But we welcome the input from the Honourable Member. In terms of instruments to ensure that workers get the money as raised by Honourable Ngabane, Chairperson, I think this is one of the issues that we are grappling with as a department and as URF, to make sure that the money transferred to the employers get to the workers. The tools that we've put in place to manage this problem, Chair, we've communicated in public, and I think maybe we need to communicate even more, that once an employer has been reported that they have not paid the money for the first month, the subsequent month where the employer applies, money gets paid directly to employees. So that's one of the control measures that we've introduced to ensure that where a case has been reported of non-payment, immediately it gets, each time the employer applies, we pay directly to the employees so that we ensure that money gets to the employees as quickly as possible. But any non-payment members, we treat it as a potential fraud, where we report it to the fraud and risk team to investigate. I must report upfront members, I don't think it's the case here, but the majority of cases that we've received, we've picked up where the employer advances money to the employees. And let's say, for example, the advance is 4,000 rands. And when URF pays, no, let's say the employer advances 2,000 rands. When URF pays, it pays 4,027 rands, which is our minimum at April. Now, when the money comes into the employer's account, the employer pays the difference and keeps the 2,000 rands, which was initially agreed. And we made it possible in our directive that an employer should be able to advance funds to the employees where it's possible, and they can offset it with the money that URF will pay through. And I think sometimes we pick up that employees don't seem to understand that arrangement has been made so that they are able to survive during these difficult times. But there are those employers, members, that you know that has been reported and that has been subjected to investigation where they've kept the money. The chief risk officer is busy doing investigation. And we've also put a hold on them, and when they apply for the second time, we transfer money straight to the employees. Chairperson, you raised two telling points that we'll discuss with the DG, how we affect your proposal, Chair, so that we balance protection of information and also making sure that people adhere to the agreement that they've signed with us, that they'll transfer money within 2 days.
Well, that was the MOA they signed, that once they receive the money, within 48 hours, money must leave their coffers. And there's no reason why money should sit in the coffers of these companies. We'll engage with the TT on the first method to expose these companies and name and shame all the delinquent employers. Chair, I hope I've answered all the questions raised. Thank you, Chair.
Can I
raise an order, Chair?
Yeah. Okay.
Can I raise an order, Chair?
Honorable Nonsen, your order?
Thank you, Chair. My point of order is with regard to the response by Commissioner of the Compensation Fund. The request, Chair, is that a report that tells us the number of complaints or cases involved that have been taken into the process of MUSA. And out of that total number, are those that have been cleared for payment? And out of that number, are those that have not been cleared? We need that report. We can't be treated or in the manner that the commissioner approaches or chooses to respond to the question. I don't think he must take us for granted. We request that information in good faith so that we are able, therefore, just like him, to speak with a straight face when we talk to the issues of intervention and resolving of the problems. Hence, I made the same request to my honorable colleague, Honorable Bigra, that he do likewise. Give us the information shared with us and take us into confidence about those unpaid claims so that collectively you are able to resolve the issues. So I don't accept the response of the commissioner. I think it's a bit dismissive, if not silly. Thank you, Chair.
Talents of the commissioner being silly.
Sorry for being too harsh, but I think the manner in which he was responding is not acceptable.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you. I think that order is in order. DG, I think you wanted also to speak?
Yes, Chair. I wanted to speak to that question as well, that we will provide that breakdown information, Chairperson. And secondly, I wanted to just respond to the question that Honorable Mdabe raised about the Pinetown Labour Centre that has not had a regional manager. I have been informed that appointment has since been made, Chairperson. Mr. Gwala, who will be a new regional manager, will start, will report on report to duty on the 1st of September 2020. And the other issues that were raised, we will attend to them as per the indication of the commissioner. So I wanted to raise just those two points. Thanks.
Oh, thank you, DJ. I just want to check before we give over to the minister to respond on some of the things. Are there any issues that members want to raise?
Yeah, Madam Commissioner, Madam Chair, Michael Bagram.
One per member. All right.
Shangweni, Chair.
Thank you. If I may go ahead, Madam.
Yes, just one question.
Thank you. Yeah, just quickly to first of all say thank you very much. I will provide a list of complaints. Just tell me where I must send it, because I like the idea of Honourable Nonsele. It's a wise idea, and I'm happy to send those lists. I'll get it updated and send it through to whoever I must send it to. And I also like your idea about the exposure. We must name and shame people. Absolutely. So I strongly believe that at the end of the day, the minister has to name and shame every single company that's held over the monies and refused to pay it over to their staff. I've been asking for that for a long time, and let's have it. And then finally, what we did hear from the DG, and thank you for that. I now hear that there is a preliminary report from the Auditor General. I presume the committee will get this preliminary report and the recommendations. I presume also those recommendations will be sent to NEDLAC. And so let's have a look at that preliminary report. I'm pleased to hear that the suspension is now uplifted and they're paying again. So let's have a look at the report and see what went wrong. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Dana.
Thank you, Chair. Now, I'd like to agree that I think it's a good thing that employers who receive TERS funds and do not pay it over to their employees are named and shamed, so we can stop villainizing employers in general. And then I didn't get an answer to my question with regards to technical or system support being set up to assist claimants and doctors or medical practitioners who have to claim and who cannot work with the Comp Easy system on their side. So if I could just get an answer to that, I'd appreciate it. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Dlamini.
Thank you very much, Chair. And I also want to fully agree, fully agree with the report by Honourable Nonsela that request and also your proposal. I think we have also raised it before, that we would need a list, and I think I've raised it even in a parliamentary question, that we will need the list of companies that haven't received this money and not paid to the people that need it or that it's intended to. And then just on the one of the underspending chair, I don't know, the DG didn't answer it for me to my satisfaction. I would have thought that leading this team, yes, we can agree that they don't receive the money from Treasury, but that gives them at no, it doesn't allow them to sort of have these underspendings. And I thought you would have lead and say that we will definitely have a look into it and ensure that these underspendings doesn't happen, but now it's just being put under the carpet. So for me I need from him a little bit more of commitment to ensure that such these things doesn't reoccur in each and every quarter, and it gets sorted out regardless as to where and they are getting their money or incomes from. It is still money of the state and it still needs to be accounted for. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you. So that I just want to this to raise issues about the vacancy rate. I will request Minister the breakdown of the vacancy rate in terms of UIF province by province and the positions that are vacant. I'm raising this because communities are yes, I understand the issue of the lockdown, the levels and the protection of members of the members in the department and the people at large. But in my view, if the vacancy rate is like this, no wonder there is a delay in payment, among other things. So you'll take, let me make an example. In the health, there's a shortage of staff in a particular clinic. People will stand there for hours for the whole day because there's only one professional nurse and two enrolled nurses and one cleaner and one person who's dispensing medicines. That delays the service. I'm assuming, Minister, maybe when you come in, you will clear my mind that it will then be the same thing. It's the same thing with the UIF, if then there is that amount of number of posts that are vacant. So that's why my question is, which provinces are affected by that? At which level and the level of posts, or is it in the head office? Same applies in the head office. We must then be exposed to that. You may not be getting that you may not be having that information now, but please, if you can't respond to it now, can we get that by next week? So that when you come for the annual thing in preparing for the PRRR, we must be aware of what is happening. We can't be general now, Minister. We want specifics because we are in a very challenging period and our people are not patient with us if we keep on being general. So that's why the specifics, well, the specifics are going to assist us when we conduct our oversight when we do constituency work, we are able to respond to the public in general. Thank you very much. Minister, I will then give you the opportunity. You have been listening to all our questions and you will reflect if some of them are impossible and tell us what will then be the reason. But I think our questions are within the context that we are in a difficult situation, new normal, and therefore this department, among others, is in the center of ensuring that those that have been subjected to unemployment with the challenges, they are then able to be assisted. A point which maybe you may be able to respond to, if not, you tell me. There's something that has occurred in this country. And I find it very strange that we are quiet as communities and the society at large. A worker that has been assaulted by her employer, which she has been working for 26 years. And when I just made a follow-up, I picked up that I'm told by the MPs that in that region, in that area, that, you know, even she was last deducted EUIF by her employer in 2004. You can imagine now, she is out of work. I don't know what is going to happen. She's not going to be covered because she's a domestic worker. You know, the new amendments in COIDA. And those things are things that are really. And when we speak about racism in this country, at times we are being accused of not wanting to do the work. So, Minister, if you can just advise in that. If you can't, it's fine. If I'm putting you under the bus, tell me it's okay. But it's something that affects labor indirectly because it's a worker that has been injured, not even injured, assaulted on duty. Thank you, Honorable Members. Minister, over to you.
Thanks, Chairperson. Do you hear me? Do you hear me, Chair?
We can hear you, Minister. We can't see you.
Yeah, we can't see you, but we can hear you.
Oh,
yeah, we see you. Yeah, now we see you.
Hey. Those are Chairperson and the members of the committee, together with the DM and DG and officials, my apologies for connecting late. Well, I started at the cabinet, which started earlier, but as early as 15 minutes before, I was already trying to connect, but failed. And apologies, of course, to my colleague, the DM, for who had to make an impromptu speech. I just want to assure the members that we take the oversight very seriously and the role of oversight of Parliament very seriously. in holding us to account as members of the executive and public officials. And therefore, on all the issues raised, we are going to respond. We are going to submit those outstanding reports. And I will make sure that it happens, and the DG will make sure that it happens. The officials have provided the detailed presentation on the performance of the two funds. But I think I must just say, from strategic overview, focusing on the contribution of the efforts of the funds during the current pandemic and the state of disaster. Well, on the side of compensation fund, I can say that while some more than 5,000 COVID-related claims have been received by the compensation fund and the two mutual bodies licensed to provide quota services in the mining, iron and steel, and construction sectors amounting to 3.8 billion. This is a small part of the work of the compensation fund. But one is likely to grow as a result of the pandemic. And I think once flooded with the claims, it's going to be the test of our systems, which Vuyo Mafata was talking about. And maybe we might crack, but we hope that it's going to test our systems, and weaknesses, when they appear, we'll be able to deal with them. But of course, I'm particularly grateful for the close working relationship between the fund and the business unit in South Africa in assisting these medical providers to migrate to the new electronic system, which we think that is going to provide greater controls as well as speeding up payments. And on the UIF, on the side of the UIF, I think as much as we've spent, and I'm pleased in terms of COVID benefits, we spent over 41 billion, which has been dispersed to laid off workers and in over 9 million payments since the beginning of the lockdown. These payments, we believe that they've supported millions of the laid off workers and their families and injected cash in local economies. And meanwhile, during the same period, normal UIF has been paid. But Chair President, members, the COVID test benefits represent a massive increase in the mandate and upscaling of the operations of the UIF. And from the very start of the COVID-19 test benefits process, especially given the large amount of funds involved, you remember, as Minister, I kept on saying the UIF needed to strengthen its financial controls with all social partners at Netflix. It was agreed that there would be complete audit of all payments, what we called the follow the money strategy. And we also, on our own, requested the officials to invite the AG to come in to perform an interim audit to highlight any risk. And in addition, now we all know that recently the president issued a proclamation instructing the AG to audit the COVID-related government transactions, including our own UIF. So we've already engaged, as the DC has reported, we've engaged the AG on this interim audit which they conducted in COVID-19 test benefits. Like any audit, the AG has said some preliminary observations. And I want to say preliminary observations, because findings will only be once the AG has come with a final report and put it in the public. But those observations were indicating some risk and gaps in the benefit payment system. And the fund definitely has to take the appropriate action. Indeed, since the introduction of the test benefit, the UIF has moved with caution, delaying payments where risk became apparent. And if the administration delays payment for a day or two, it's not new. It has been happening. We know that we had a lot of stops and goes And it's necessary when something has been observed, we quickly stop and then check. And upon hearing the initial observations from the AG indicating those risks, and I gave also very clear instructions to the DG, as he has reported, and to also have these forensic on some of the issues which are not clear into the workings of the UIF. And the UIF commissioner has been required to also provide comprehensive responses to the risks identified. And we have also requested the National Treasury to deploy technical resources to the UIF to urgently implement the interim recommendations, even before the final reports come. But we know the final report is going to be coming, so we're dealing with those red flags so that we don't go deeper into crisis. Furthermore, we have referred some of the issues which have been raised by the internal audit, raised by our own officials during this period, and suspicious transactions, some raised by the AG, we have referred them to the SIU, and it's for action now, because if there are criminal issues, we have to act. And the department and the UIF will provide the feedback regarding these various processes to allow the AG to finalize this report. And then on the basis of the public report, which will be made public, I think the committee will call us to come and account on the issues which have been raised. So we're awaiting the final report from the AG. And I can assure the members, this goes without saying, the department and the UIF will provide this to Parliament with any and all further information that may be requested. And I want to emphasize, any person who will be found to have defrauded the public funds will have to be dealt with internally by law enforcement and even by law enforcement agencies. And I've instructed the DG to look into the issue of the capacity and the skills of both institutions to improve the performance. Because we must be honest, the TERS, which put a lot of pressure, as I close, Chairperson, the TERS payment has exposed us in terms of our capacity and even in terms of our system. There's a serious need for a big revamp of our system. On the vacancy rate, if we did not have the pandemic, we could have filled a substantial percentage of the post. And I must just tell the members that internally we had a big debate with the DG and the management on the issue that offices were closed, especially level 5 and level 4. Workers, some of them were sick, and from time to time we had this phenomenon of stop and go even in our own offices, even with those few who were strategic, who were left behind because offices were closed. We had to debate whether conducting interviews online, is it going to work? Is it not going to disadvantage some of the people and so on? So even now, we're not yet at a full capacity in our offices. So, but we are trying by all means. And we think that, I must just say, Chairperson, we will respond to all the issues. And we thank the members, and this is part of the accountability. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Minister. And I think on our side also as members, although it may be a drop in the ocean, we must commend some of your staff at a provincial and regional levels that are assisting communities, because those communities will come back and say thank you very much, we have been assisted by this member of staff. But they also do reflect when they are not getting joy, and the DG will testify on this, that I don't give him time to rest. I call him every time. I'm sure when he sees my number, he will say, oh my God, what is this now? But I do want to say, yes, they are staff members in the Department of Employment and Labor that are doing their best in assisting communities. The information that we requested, Minister and DG, we will appreciate if we do get that, so that we don't lead by getting some sound bites and in corridors. And I do appreciate what you are saying in terms of saying we will then have obviously the AG will inform us, and we will get that presentation. And I'm happy when you say you will act without any fear or favor in whoever will be found to be on the wrong. We'll have to look into this thing of the protection of information, but it can't be protection of information at the expense of our people who are perishing because of poverty and hunger in terms of what the employers are doing. And if those employers have been found to have done something wrong, they will have to be exposed. Even those that, and I think you must also expose us to the program, to the project of following your money, because we would like to know who are those that are paying back the money that they have been given, either by default or by whatever situation. I think as the committee, we have got a mammoth task in front of us. I will have to check with Mr. Frolic. When can we start? Because it has been 80 seats now, the bill on COIDA, where there is, among others, an amendment which is then going to assist the domestic workers. Domestic workers in this country are really under serious situations. Minister, I'm going to follow this up. I was told yesterday that in an area in Gauteng, there are domestic workers that are still paid 1,005 rands. It's something that is still unbelievable. How then do we ensure that we encourage domestic workers to speak up on the abuse and the oppression that and racism that they are still under in this country? And we are not going to be able to get that information if we don't encourage them to speak. I think this incident of this old lady at Ekurhuleni has made some of them to come up, although they are still afraid because they don't know whether they're not going to lose their jobs or they're not going to be assaulted by their workers. I'm sorry, by their employers, who unfortunately, and I have to say this, unfortunately, it's white people, some of them, who are still continuing doing this to our people. And we're not going to keep quiet.
Majority.
And we're not going to keep quiet in this because it's really unfair when we are in a constitutional democratic country. And even if that is being done by us as black people to people that are working in our houses, those must be exposed. I think it's about time that we allow, because if they don't liberate themselves, who is going to liberate? We must assist them to liberate themselves. Thank you very much, members. We are meeting again next week, and which then we'll then get the report from the department. But thank you very much, Minister, DM and DG and your team, under very difficult situations and conditions. At least you are doing the work, and I'm not trying to buy faces. You are one of those committees that you are one of those members of the executives that do respect and attend our committee sessions. And I want to say on behalf of the committee, we applaud, keep that up. Until we meet again, honorable members, there is plenary today, which there are questions, Minister, from the committee. And
It's Honorable Nhlangweni, Chair. Sorry, just before you close, Chair.
Yes.
Sorry. No, I also just want to pass my gratitude to the DG Chair on most of the cases that we have sent through to his office. He have really ensured that those cases do get the attention it deserves. So we really like to send our appreciation to him for ensuring that those cases get sorted out that we sent to him. Thanks, Chair.
Yeah, thank you very much. Minister and DG, even when you are not assisting us, we will say, and the team members, even where they fail us, we will say, no, now here we're being messed up. But thank you very much. We're happy. I think on behalf of the committee, as the chair of this committee, I think it's an encouraging move in moving forward that at least we will leave a legacy in this portfolio committee, assisted by the minister and his DG. Thank you very much. Until we meet next week, we are going to meet you, Minister, in plenary when you will be responding to our questions. Thank you very much. Our meeting is adjourned.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair.